Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Hi, I'm Jerry Goodspeed. I'm here at the Utah State University Extension Education Building at the Ogden Botanical Garden. And today I'm here to talk about a problem that we're seeing, an invasive species that is moving into our area and becoming more and more of a problem to homeowners and to landscapes. And that problem is the garden gnome. Now, the gnome, we believe, was introduced into our area from England. They're very attractive at first, a little bit of a cheery smile, if you will, but over time they become very invasive into the garden. You'll find them creeping up, or showing up in the herb garden, next thing in the vegetable garden, and pretty soon in the annuals and the perennials. And once established, they're very difficult to control. Here in the garden in mid-February, and in Ogden we're about a zone 5, a zone 4, and you can already see their cheery little red hats starting to poke through the ground. Now this is very typical of our area. They're first, usually about the end of January, 1st of February, you will start to see this red cone just after they've germinated. Now they're very hardy, and this is why we see them germinating so early in the spring, or late winter.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Now here's the man who's greening your world one kilohertz at a time, Mike Novak.
All right, let me see if I have this straight.
Mm-hmm.
You're older than 30 now,
yes.
Okay? You are responsible for a young child.
Yes.
You have a more or less responsible job at a major market radio station.
Yes.
Today you're dressed in your Blackhawks jersey. You're going to the Pride Parade, and you're going to do what to the Stanley Cup?
If I can, I want to lick it. I know it sounds ridiculous just saying it out loud, I know. But I figured if you're going Pride, go, for lack of a better term, go balls to the walls or go home. So I figured I got to lick it. If I'm going to meet it at the Pride Parade,
good way
I got
to start
lick
a
it.
Show on
I'm
a
sorry.
Sunday morning.
I couldn't let.
Good morning, everybody. Hey.
Yep.
It's the morning Sunday Mike Novak Zoo with Heather Fry.
Yeah, I know. The churchgoers don't like me, but I'll get over it.
But actually, it's okay. Because here's the way it works. They listen on the way in, they catch all that stuff,
right.
and then they can repent.
Right, exactly. They can do it for me, too. If someone wants to repent for me, I'm all for it.
Those
I'm
of you on the way to church right now. just walk in the door and drop to your knees.
Yeah,
that's
just
it.
Shake the, be like, help, God, she can't help it. She's a redhead.
If you're Catholic, throw lots of holy water on yourself. If you're some other denomination, I don't know.
I like the holy water on the plants myself. Give it to
the
plants.
Does that help them grow?
One would think.
Well, because you got to figure the holy water has gassed off.
Right.
There's not a lot of chlorine in there.
Because it
sits in the little fountain there. So if you use that, the plants would actually like that.
I remember being a small child and walking in and seeing that and going, what the hell is Why do they have a bird?
See, now they're going to have to do it again.
I know.
Let's see. In the first,
that was my young days. I didn't know what it was for. Because I wasn't a churchgoer. My parents were bad. They didn't make me go to Sunday school and all that stuff.
I only wish, but there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, did Mikey find what
we're
looking?
He found our song, yeah.
Okay, we'll play that later.
So you're going
to Pride Parade.
To chase the Stanley Cup.
Now, how do you know the Stanley Cup is going to be there?
It's been in a lot of press releases. It was on Blackhawks.com. Blackhawks player, who's now sadly already been...
And how could I have missed that? I mean, I've been cruising Blackhawks.com for weeks now.
Yeah, it was in a press release. They sent it out. Brian Sopel, who's been traded to Atlanta, is bringing it in honor, though. His reasons are pretty cool. He had a former teammate, not of the Blackhawks, but another team, and of course it's going to escape my brain right now, who had a young teenage son, 17, 18, who came out. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult. It was a small town, it was a hockey community that's not very often, you don't get that kind of, lifestyle very often in that world, if you will, or out an outward one anyway. And he died tragically in a car crash. So
wow.
Sopel is bringing the Stanley Cup and bringing it to Pride Parade in honor of Brendan. But that was the boy's name, who was, again, tragically killed, who was brave enough to admit who he was and come out of the closet at a very young age. And so he's doing this in memory of
him. How does one get permission, even if you're on the championship hockey team, how does one get permission to bring it to the Pride Parade?
They each get it for a day.
So I don't know if
this was a marketing thing or if this was Sopel's day with
it. I would think, what if it gets dinged?
Well, then,
or if some goofy woman decides to try to lick it.
I won't lick it without permission. Maybe.
Are you kidding me? What's the point? They're going to say no.
No, you don't ask. You just pose for the picture, and right before they click it, you turn it and you lick it like you would, Brian Urlacher, Hugh Jackman, or Raquel Welch, or whatever.
I want, and of course, you're going to have photos.
I'm going to try.
All right. They're going to be on the website.
I'm going to call you if I can. If we get down there, I'll try to call you.
Speaking of which, of course, I forgot my camera again today.
I've got mine.
Because I was going to take photos of our garden, our parking lot farm, as I call it. I call it those things are growing like crazy.
They're doing wonderfully. And it's only been rainwater. They've been watered with nothing but rainwater.
That is the coolest part.
Yeah.
Or one of the coolest parts. First of all, thank you to SIDS. Thank you to Pesci's. Thank you to Dr. Earth. They provided the earth boxes that we're growing plants in on the side of the building up against the brick wall. You got to see it's
a 90-degree angle of cement.
Right. It's a stinking little parking lot.
Yeah, it's a blacktop parking lot that's been old and faded. And
beat up and Southside-y for...
To this cinder block brick.
And those earth boxes in there, and of course, we got veggies also from SIDS and Pesci's. Dr. Earth provided soil. Heather provides the rainwater. And every time I walk in the studio here, I go past the back door, and you've got the waste baskets full of rainwater that you collect.
That
so during the week when it's pouring,
mm-hmm.
you run out there and you're shoving baskets under the gutter.
Yes.
That's
I'm
so
rotating
cool.
the unused bins underneath the rain spout.
Now,
we should get a rain barrel. We should.
Yeah. I mean, that's the next step. And then you could just turn on the tap.
Exactly. And fill up.
Hey, let me ask you a question. You think the station's going to spring for a rain barrel?
No.
No. They'd rather have a bunch of...
No.
Waste baskets full of rainwater in the back.
Yeah.
Those mosquito breeding.
Yeah. Well, I've been disturbing them, so we're not, breeding mosquitoes. There's one, though, that is a little suspicious looking. Like, there was some kind of, I thought it was just brown dirt or whatever in the base of it. And as it's filled with water, it just doesn't look like inviting water. It's brown, and I don't know if we should use it or not. But I hate to waste a whole bucket of water.
I was thinking, what comes off the roof anyway?
Right.
But
I think so. But what makes me nervous is I think this was already in the bucket.
Well, then just dump that one on, rinse it out, and then fill it up again.
Because everyone's like, wow, that's
a good thing. You know what else I forgot? I forgot my poster for the Sheffield Garden Walk, which comes up in a couple of weeks.
Yes, I know.
Laurie Lewis, I was a judge for the gardens in the garden contest this past Thursday. And Laurie Lewis, who was going to be on the show in a couple of weeks and answer garden questions and bring CDs of Rusted Roots back.
Yay! Cowboy Mouth is back already.
Cowboy Mouth is back. I got a couple of new ones in there, and he's going to bring CDs, and we're going to play bump music and talk gardening and talk about the Sheffield Garden Walk. But I forgot to bring that poster, so I forgot the camera, forgot the poster.
You're entitled. It's early.
When I set stuff out, I'm going to forget it. It doesn't matter.
I've taken to hanging it in, like, you know, the grocery bag on my doorknob as I leave. And I've still managed once or twice to leave it there.
The one thing I did remember this morning was the cold pizza in the fridge.
Gotta have nutrition.
That was it.
It's a breakfast of champions.
So at any rate, our garden here on the side of Chicago's Progressive Talk Studios, the opulent showcase studios on South Pulaski Road between Zaca Tacos and Paco's Tacos, it's green. We've got tomatoes. We've got peppers. I was looking at the zucchini starting to go nuts out there. Some of those plants are just...
They're happy.
They're happy.
They're
now,
really,
tell me
really
what,
happy.
Tell me what happened with... Wait, we had a tragedy this
we
week.
We did.
But I was doing some research on it. It may not be a tragedy. It involved the zucchini. Well, we've got a couple of types of zucchini.
It was a white zucchini. It was the white zucchini.
The white?
The yellow zucchini.
Yellow. It's the pale
zucchini.
That's the one.
That's the one. It's the only plant that suffered.
All right. We had a tragedy that I want to get to in a second because Heather was part of that. We got some time if you want to call and just say hi. You got a garden question, 773-838-WCPT, 773-838-9278, Rick DeMille Weather at 830. Second hour. They're back. Well, they never went away, and they were here all along, and that's the Asian carp, the invasive Asian carp, which, one was caught in Lake Calumet. I'm going to have Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council talk to us about that and how, stupid we're being about the whole thing. You know, I look at the Gulf Coast and I look at the Asian carp, I think they're the same tragedy. And the tragedy is stupidity and greed.
And putting
commerce over everything else, including this beautiful planet that we were given stewardship of, and we have just beat it into the ground. Beat it into the universe. Mm. Whatever.
I still want BP executives to plug the hole.
No, we're going to do the junk shot instead of golf balls? We're going to use BP executives.
I'm okay with that.
Oh, no, I know what we can do. We can use parts of, what's his name's yacht. And
right.
we'll shoot those into Tony Hayward.
Yeah.
And we'll shoot those into the hole. You know,
it's like when I still, again, like when I want my life back. I'm like, I wanted to take pictures of all the oil-covered birds and animals.
And of
like,
course.
Think they'd like their life back?
It's been raining oil.
Raining oil in Louisiana.
In Louisiana. I want to ask Rick DeMille about that. I'm going to ask him about...
Technically, they're trying to tell you it's not really rain because it's not actually coming from a cloud.
Oh, it's pure oil just coming from the sky, right?
It's just, you know,
it's not
coming from a cloud. It's being sucked up by, like, the air or whatever and then dropped
It's raining
land.
Oil.
That's what I said. But they're going to be like, well, technically
raining.
No, because it hasn't actually gone through the
it's
cloud.
It's raining oil in Louisiana, and if you think that has nothing to do with BP.
Yeah, you're full of it. You're insane.
Watch your language, young lady.
I didn't say.
Watch it. Come on. These people are going to church. All right.
Okay,
all right.
Sorry.
So we'll come back and talk about the tragedy of our
zucchini.
It's not really a tragedy. Anyway, I love Dr. Wally's tips of the week so much that I'm giving you two of them today, brought to you by Pesci's Garden Center in Des Plaines. Now, Wally isn't a certified doctor, but the magazines in his office are from 1986. Since we're all busy growing tomatoes, both tips today are about that. Dr. Wally believes in putting perennials and herbs that attract pollinators and beneficial insects right in his veggie garden. Bumblebees love bee balm, catmint, and zebrine malva. Think about that for a while. Zebrine. You can look that up for me, Heather. And they thank you for it. When you put those plants in your garden, they thank you by pollinating your tomatoes and peppers. Did you know that 80% of all flowering plants rely on pollinators for survival? But the world's bees are in peril, as I've talked about on the show many times. It's estimated that one-third of the population is gone due to pesticides and diseases. That alone is a good reason to avoid chemical pesticides and herbicides. Also, provide a water source for the insects. A little mud puddle works great. That's all they need. Leave small piles of twigs and brush for nesting. See, you neatness freaks out there, just leave a little pile of something out there so they can overwinter. Next hour, Dr. Wally will have some more tomato tips. Don't forget that you can enter Pesci's Tremendous Tomato Contest. Go to Pesci's.com for more information. Family owned since 1924, Pesci's is just minutes off of I-294 at 170 South River Road, one block north of Rand Road in Des Plaines. Visit them online at Pesci's.com.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Nothing there yet, huh?
Well, I've got Malva Zabrina down here. Maybe that,
there we go. That's probably what he means. Zabrina.
Malva Zabrina. That sounds like some hot girl's name.
Also known as Hollyhock Mallow. That's pretty much what I thought it was.
Uh-huh.
So Hollyhock Mallow, Catmint, Bee Balm, those are some of the plants you put in your garden around your vegetables. Just plant them right in with everything, and it attracts pollinators, and it keeps the pests off balance, and it helps protect your veggies. Now, espoma is another thing that can help your veggies. They've been making organic gardening products since 1929, when the organic label was less of a marketing tool and more about the health of your plant. Continuing in this tradition, Espoma offers a line of organic supplements and soil amendments called Organic Traditions. Espoma's Organic Traditions products are pure plant food with no fillers or sludges. They'll enrich your garden with the best the earth has to offer. One of the 11 products is garden gypsum pellets that loosen heavy clay soils and helps cure turf burns from pet urine. There's also dried blood, which is a safe source of organic nitrogen and will naturally produce more vigorous plants with richer, greener leaves. Kelp meal is an excellent soil conditioner and a rich source of minerals and plant hormones. All products from Espoma's Organic Traditions line come in both large and small bags, the right size to fit the job. For more information about Espoma Natural Gardening Solutions, call 888-ESPOMA1 or visit espoma.com. That's ESPOMA.com. Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929.
This one will be played today. There'll be lots of dancing in the streets to that one. It'll be on several floats, I'm sure.
I got to admit, I don't really get the whole Lady Gaga thing.
I don't either, but I like this one.
Yeah. This want your garden. I want your disease.
That's, I want your weeds pulled when I'm down on my knees. I want your grub. Out of my dirt.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. It'll be a good time, though. I've been to Pride before. I did it in 2006. I was in the parade once before. So this is old. The only new thing is that there's something in the parade that I want. The last time, I just wanted to have fun and celebrate with my friends.
I want your trophy.
Yes. I want it right now. I want it in my lip, my lap, and to take it home with me and love it forever and ever. And
you know, they'll probably just give it to you.
Been a Hawks fan my whole life. Yeah. That was the only thing. I think what
it
really
it's like there's
fire.
No other Hawks fans in town, you know.
Well, this is what lit my fire, because I have friends who are complete bandwagoners. They've never been to a Blackhawks game in their life. They couldn't point Bobby Hull out in a crowd of
speaking of gardening.
Yeah, well.
Speaking of gardening.
I know. But so that's why I want to do it, because I'm not a bandwagoner. I want to.
Speaking of gardening.
Yes, but gardening.
Yes. All right. You came out to water the plants in our earth boxes on the side of the building.
Yes.
Earlier this week. What did you see?
These small brown-like birds, which were, I'm not 100% sure if they were sparrows or not, because they were all dark brown. I know sparrows are, tend to be...
mottled? They have different colors?
Yeah. No, they have like a light brown and a dark, you know, like the darker like tips. These were like all little brown birds and are...
For one thing, I'm just amazed that the birds would come into our parking lot at all.
Yes, and Gavin Carroll, our operations manager and production man extraordinaire, was like, perhaps they're urbanized sparrows, but Lord knows. But they were attacking... the zucchini plant, the yellow zucchini plant, like four or five of them.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% positive.
And they caught them red-beaked. And they were popping the blooms off.
They were
off.
Pulling the blooms right off. It looked like little snippers had come in and snipped off all the blossoms on the plant.
If any of you out there have grown zucchini plants and had this happen, because I did a little research on it. I couldn't find anything
online. Yeah, and they didn't go after any of the other plants. Just that one zucchini plant.
Just right, because we have several zucchini plants out there, and this was the yellow zucchini. So if anybody has had this and a solution actually would be helpful.
I was getting ready to pull the full-on scarecrow and just sit out there.
773-838-9278. That would be really interesting. I did a little research on it, and I couldn't find an instance. I didn't look that hard, but I did some research trying to find an instance of birds attacking zucchini plants and snip. Now, what could happen is depending on the temperature, if it gets too hot during the day or too cold at night, you can lose blossoms. And they'll drop off and you'll say, hey, what happened? And, you know, because they produce male and female, and then they...
right.
Pollinate themselves. And they start with the male blossoms usually, and then, you know, the temperature gets right and you have both, and then you get the pollination, then you get the plants. But you caught them in the act.
Caught them in the act. They were all chirping and twittering around the plant, and they were in the one earth box laying in and off. It was a tweeting, and I don't mean the Twitter tweet. I mean the bird tweet, like... They were going crazy. They were all tweeting and chirping and
tweeting. That's actually kind of funny.
It is
the whole you can't even say the word tweet anymore.
I know.
Another word ruined by technology.
I'm gonna tweet that I said tweet in regards to a bird, they were like having a little party on the plant and it had I remember distinctly it had at least four. Real good-sized, beautiful blossoms when I pulled in the morning. Mm-hmm. And when I came out, you know, 2 or 3 hours after I'd been here, it had one left on the plant. And then by the end of the day, that one was gone, too.
And as the day went on, you watched them become fewer and fewer.
Yeah. I was so angry at those darn birds. I've been out there every day. We were out there in the rain when we planted those.
You thought they were your friends, didn't you?
I was. I'm like, you know, like the Joni Mitchell, you know, give me the birds and the bees, please. I was like, take the darn birds. I'm sick of it. Leave my plants alone.
Well, I'm wondering if anybody's... I'm thinking maybe we do some kind of netting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I've seen, like, you know, they have... You can buy them at Walgreens. They're like those little nets that you can put, like, over your summer food dish if you're having a party. And you're having a picnic, so you can put this, like, it's like a basket net that drops over your fruit salad so the bugs can't get on it.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking maybe something along those lines, like if you put a little net over it.
I don't know. We've got other plants, but we should be able to put it's just an earth box.
Yeah.
It should be not that difficult to put.
An earth box, people would be jealous
to put
of.
Some, and they're gorgeous.
They're wonderful.
They look really, really good.
The tomato plants especially.
And my tomatoes at home look really, really good. We've got these tomatoes. Okay, Kathleen wanted them up high so that she could get to them, water them easily, okay, and get to the tomatoes easily. So we put them on this like 5 foot, it's actually a container that I bought a while ago. It's made of I forget what it's made out of, but it's this platform that you can put it on. So it's that high. So we started with the tomatoes growing that high. So now they're about 10 feet tall. All right. And I said, and I warned her, I said, you know, if we put them, if we start them here, we're not going to be able to reach them. So now she's saying, I know, we'll espalier them along the garage wall. Well, now we'll turn them sideways. Well, I'm not doing the espalier.
I didn't know there was a term for it.
Yeah, I am not doing it. Kathleen, you can do the espalier, all right, along the garage, because they're at home, they're growing like crazy, too. We just have, I can't wait. It's really good tomato weather. Right
it
now.
Has been. It's just been humid and hot, and they like that, don't they?
They do indeed. Here's a tip from the care of trees. It's been stormy. Huh. That's one way of putting it. I'm going to ask Rick DeMaio about that. It's been a stormy couple of weeks, and if your tree lost some limbs, you might need some help from the care of trees. When trees are damaged, they grow protective cells around the wounded area, much like the way your blood forms a scab. This happens at the branch collar, a swollen area where the branch grows from the trunk. But if the wound is jagged, well, you can't get it to, the tree can't cover it over. And it keeps the tree vulnerable to insects and diseases. That's why you need a certified arborist to properly prune your tree. Well, you know, you can do some of it, the small ones, but if it's a large branch, you really want somebody who knows what they're doing. Like the Care of Trees, with 9 locations. They've been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, a proud sponsor of the 2010 Steel Tour de Trees. All right. I just played that commercial. I'm hearing nothing. One would think that would be coming through the board. Oops.
That helps.
There it is. If you're a gardener, you know about NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, the essential nutrients for plants. And at Dr. Earth, their nitrogen is from fish meal, cottonseed meal, alfalfa meal, fishbone meal, and feather meal. Their phosphorus is partially derived from soft rock phosphate, which you're just not going to find in other products. The potassium is also from natural sources. Then Dr. Earth adds their special probiotics, and that's just the beginning. Read up at drearth.com, where you can find a dealer near you, because Dr. Earth is available only at your local independent garden center. Rick DeMaio weather is coming up in just 60 seconds. Want to do something good for your lawn? I'm going to surprise you because I'm not going to recommend a fertilizer. How about adding some cotton burr compost? I'm talking about Nature's Blend with alfalfa and humate by Back to Nature Compost. Nature's Blend with alfalfa and humate is a balanced blend of composted cotton burrs, composted cattle manure, alfalfa, and humate. Cotton burrs and cattle manure, besides their value as organic fertilizers, provide an important food source for beneficial soil organisms. Alfalfa is high in nitrogen, and humate is an important source of humic acid and micronutrients. It activates beneficial soil organisms. Nature's Blend with alfalfa and humate works great as a top dressing or soil amendment. And you're feeding your soil, which feeds your lawn. Dr. Wally at Pesci's and I both love Back to Nature Compost. So give it a try. You can get Nature's Blend with alfalfa and humate at The Barn in Cary, Illinois, Gethsemane Garden Center in Chicago, and Pesci's in Des Plaines and Lake Geneva.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln. The story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace. That story is true. I'm here to say I was driving that Model A.
This actually has nothing to do with Rick DeMaio, because I know you don't drive like this, right, Rick?
Well, it depends.
Rick, hold on, sorry. Now we'll try it. Rick, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, sorry.
I was saying it depends if I have to get somewhere in a hurry. I have to drive like that.
But you don't have a hot rod Lincoln, do you?
No, but my first car was a 1974 Cadillac Eldorado. Can you believe that?
Really?
Yeah, it was left over from let's say some shoddy police work left it on the street corner, and we just decided to. I won't say anything more about that.
You know what mine was? See, this is how embarrassing. Yours is a 1974. Cadillac Eldorado.
Right. Mine, it was my father's.
Mine was a 1971 purple gremlin.
Oh, my God.
Wow. It was purple?
It was a purple gremlin.
Awesome.
And I inherited it I had to buy it from my sister. She sold it to me. She wouldn't give it to me. She sold it to me.
Isn't that how it works? I think I basically used it for about 3 months because I needed to get to work. And then when I got a job and moved out to Chicago, my father says, so what do you do for a car? I'm like, well, I'll just continue to use, you know, your extra car. He goes, well, eventually you'll have to pay for the car. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't have any money for that. He goes, well, when you get some money, you will. And after about $3,000 of repair jobs later, he says, don't worry about paying for the car. And I'm like, thanks. it was one of those cars back in the early 70s that GM built, like the Oldsmobile Toronado and the Buick Riviera, where it had front-wheel drive. So you didn't have that big transmission hump in the front of the seat, which was kind of nice in the front there. It had a lot of room, but it had a lot of problems with it. So my real first true car, Mike, you had a purple gremlin. I had a baby blue Subaru station wagon. I loved it.
Yeah, but did you buy it new?
Oh, gosh, no.
Oh, oh, okay. All right, good. I'm glad to hear that.
This is a great story. I went up to a place up in Libertyville. I was working for United for about a year. I wrote a check for the car, okay? I had no idea what I was doing. I came into United the next day into the credit union, and I applied for a loan. And the woman says, oh, so what kind of car are you going to go? I said, I already have it. She goes, what do you mean? I go, well, yeah, I wrote a check out. She says, you floated the check for $2,800? I'm like, yeah. She goes, don't do that. I didn't think there's anything wrong with it because that's what the dealer told me to do. Then I told my dad the next day, he goes, you wrote a check out, and then the next day you applied for a loan? I go, is that wrong? And to this day, I couldn't believe how naive I was. And it worked out. But the look on the woman's face when she says, you already have the car and you're applying for a loan.
Hey, isn't that the way they do things on Wall Street, though?
Right, really?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're ready to go to the big time.
You got it on his face. You're all right.
Yeah.
I should have went into finance.
You should have. What are you doing in meteorology? Oh, dear. Anyway. Speaking of meteorology, there's just so much going on.
And, oh, yeah.
And I got to start with last week, Tuesday, it was Wednesday, rather. The big storm's Wednesday.
Okay, Tuesday was nice.
Yeah, Tuesday was nice. Wednesday, right. I'm in the house, mm-hmm. and it's starting to blow and everything, and then suddenly the air raid sirens go off,
right.
and I'm thinking, wait a second.
Yeah.
I'm in Logan Square.
Yeah, I thought the
right.
same thing, too.
All right, what am I... I went into the basement, you know,
I didn't.
And then I felt stupid for a while, and then I came upstairs, and then it goes off again.
Right.
And I went back into the basement, and mm-hmm. I'm out looking around and thinking. Right. Now, all right, do you have any knowledge of this, Rick? I called you. I don't know if you realized that.
I know you called me because I was working the radar at Channel 2. They called me in to do, you know, weather cut-ins with Steve Baskerville. So I was there for all the whole afternoon. And while I'm doing the radar and the telestrator, my phone rings and there's Mike Novak's name coming up. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm not doing anything special on the radio right now.
No, I just wanted to know whether I really should.
Are we going to get a one-way ticket to Oz or what?
Yeah. And
I know, and I felt like calling you back on that, but I was so busy the rest of the evening. And I did recently get an email from Jim Alsop, who's the warning coordinator meteorologist. And I basically said, you know, you guys did a great job covering the severe weather, but why so many tornado warnings? And the bottom line is that they were pretty much looking at all these little meso vortices. Those are small-scale rotation rotational effects in the leading edge of these tremendously large clusters of thunderstorms that were coming through. And because there was so much updraft taking place within the thunderstorm, because these things were basically building from about 20,000 feet to about 60,000 feet in less than 15 minutes. And what they were concerned about were these small-scale, what's called gust NATOs. And a gust NATO is basically a gust front with a weak tornado at the leading edge. And they had observed many of those, and not so much their reflectivity profile, which is what you typically see on TV, but what's called the velocity profile. That means it's looking at the horizontal way that the air is flowing. And what I had seen and what Steve had seen also, Steve Vascolo, that is, we had noticed a couple of these vortices across central areas of DeKalb County and DuPage County, but then the rain was beginning to fall so hard in the reflectivity scan that we couldn't see the mesovortices anymore, but yet we knew they were still there. So I think what the Weather Service was doing, they were basically, if you've ever gotten up in the middle of the night and it's completely dark out and you're trying to find the bathroom and you put your hand down and you're bumping into stuff, that's pretty much how we were for about an hour, trying to figure out what was going on with these little small-scale circulations. And when this activity is moving into an area of, you know, 2.5 million people, you know, Cook County, I think outside of L.A. County, is the second most populated county in the United States, you kind of play it safe. Now, did they do the right thing? I think on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being yes and 1 being no, I'd probably give them maybe an 8.5, only because they had to protect themselves.
I think I agree with that, Rick. I mean, I could see how dangerous the weather was. I had the computer in the basement, and I was looking at the radar in, you know, on the computer in the basement, and looking at this bow echo and going, wow, this is not good. Stuff is just, and it looked like, I thought for a while it was just going to train right through Chicago forever.
Right.
But then it dropped south and moved east, you know.
The thing about it is, and before you go any further with this, I think the Weather Service did the right thing, but what they could have done was then issue some sort of a statement that explained why they did what they did. Because what happens is, I had so many people say, the warnings went off, what am I supposed to do? There were no tornadoes, and people are expecting a tornado at that point. So when you don't have it, the next few times that you do end up getting something like that, I think people are going to not react to it in the proper way.
That's the problem. That is the problem. And I understand the responsibility that comes with issuing an alarm and setting off a siren. It's got to be a huge responsibility. And as they were erring on the side of safety. Now, let me ask you a question about this, because you're looking at radar. I know other stations are looking at radar. You got the National Weather Service. Do you actually contribute to what they're doing? Is it, you know, when you're at Channel 2 doing this, do you have connections with the National Weather Service, and do you call them and say, hey, we're spotting something here. Are you seeing this too?
Oh, yeah. What we do is we have access to the same radar that they have from a standpoint of the products that they allow to go out to the public, which are like two different products. But they can look at 16 different other different products from the standpoint of tilting the radar, of looking at each individual cell. And that's not the stuff that they actually put out on the air or at least over the, you know, the public wire. So we don't have access to that. If we had our own radar, we could. Even though Channel 2 does have their own radar, we don't operate in that sort of mode at that time, because what you see on the air is what we're operating with. So it would almost be like, you know, you go into the doctor's office, and instead of seeing just an X-ray, they show you all these other things just to explain everything, and you're like going, okay, I have no idea what you're talking about. So we have to basically show the bare bones of what's going on. And that is a little bit of a constraint when you're trying to explain things to the public, because I think at the same time, we would like to be showing things like not so much the reflectivity, but the velocity profile, and say, this is the reason why we're issuing the tornado warning, or at least, you know, taking this information from the Weather Service and broadcasting it. At the same time, you cannot look at just one area. We were looking at probably 4 or 5 or 6 different areas. Then we're getting, you know, reports of, you know, 3 inches of rain in 1 hour. I don't know if you heard, but Metra stopped all their trains on the westbound line.
Yeah, I did hear that. That's unusual, isn't it?
Well, what was happening was the rain was coming down so hard that the conductors were saying that they couldn't see more than 100 or 200 feet in front of them, so they were slowing their speeds down, and while everybody else was slowing their speeds down, they wanted to make sure that there were no the trains, you know, kind of coming up on their tail. So they just said, you know what, everybody, just stop where you are. I've never heard that before. That was pretty amazing.
And I have never heard that either, and that's, I have to admit, that was one of the things that really surprised me about that. Wow, so that
was Wednesday.
Yeah, that was Wednesday. It just seems to go on and on, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then we have this band of, you know, thunderstorms coming through right now, which I don't think is obviously going to be as bad, only because it's coming through at such an early time of the day. That doesn't mean that you don't get severe weather in the morning, but it just doesn't look, it doesn't appear to have the same sort of magnitude or intensity as the cells that came through on that Wednesday, which was pretty intense. I would have to say, on a scale of 1 to 10, that was about a 9.5. That was pretty amazing stuff. And the thing about it, Mike, is we've had so much severe weather lately, and people said, you know, a lot of trees came down, but there weren't a lot of small branches. And I said, well, that's because all the small branches were taken down with the event on Friday. So there were no more smaller branches to take down at that particular time.
Well,
so,
you know, and as I mentioned earlier on the show, talking about the care of trees, what happens is you get these trees and a branch gets removed and it gets kind of ripped off. And
right.
Then you've got a jagged edge, which can be dangerous in a couple of ways. One, it's possible that something else could fall down later.
Right.
And just for the health of the tree, it's not good because mm-hmm. a jagged edge opens the tree up to insects and disease.
Right. I would think they've been really busy lately.
Oh, they have been. I talked to care of tree guys this week, and they said, "Oh yeah, we're doing a lot of work." All right. Well, hang on a second, Rick, because we haven't done the forecast yet, which we'll get to, but. We got to
talk about Tropical Storm Alex.
That's yeah, we have to, and about raining oil in Louisiana and that
right.
kind of thing. And
right.
and Heather and I both have questions for you about that. That's Rick DeMaio, our meteorologist. We'll have the forecast and talking a little bit about raining oil in the Gulf. So stick around for that. It's summer lawn care time, and Sid's Greenhouses are ready to help with great organic products from Jonathan Green, like their organic lawn fertilizer. This environmentally friendly lawn food won't burn your lawn. It's formula. You know, that's the thing about the organics. You can apply them at any time. For years, if you've had a lawn and you use synthetic products, they say, "Oh yeah, you can't put it on in the heat because it'll burn the lawn," or "Don't put too much on; it's going to burn it." Organics don't do that. And if weeds are a problem, you'll want to get Jonathan Green's organic weed control. It's safe for people, pets, and the environment. Now, I will tell you something about the organic weed control. It's basically corn gluten. And folks ask me, where can I get corn gluten? And you can get it in Jonathan Green products, but wait till the end of August to apply this. And then you apply it again when the forsythias bloom in the spring, a couple of times a year, and it starts to knock back all those weeds in your yard. So for the new American lawn, look for eco-friendly products from Jonathan Green at Sid's Greenhouses. Sid's, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard, and on the web at sidsonline.com. Remember, too, that as you're cleaning up around the garage and shed, scoop up all those plastic pots, trays, and cell packs and bring them to Sid's for recycling. Once again, and I appreciate that, they're working with local recyclers to keep those discarded plastics out of the landfills.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Ready or not, we're heading into July, and if you want your Zone 5 garden to look as good as it did in May, you need a copy of the July-August issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. One plant that looks good all season is heuchera, or heuchera, depending on your plant dictionary, or you could just call them coral bells. Regardless, there are hundreds of varieties. They do well in shade, and Chicagoland Gardening tells you how to have success with this popular plant. And would you know what to do if you lost your favorite tree? You know, speaking of storms this week, what if you lost your favorite tree and your shade garden was suddenly in the middle of blazing sun? There's a story about how to adapt. Last and certainly least, my column is on the back page. There's an odd aroma coming from it this issue. I mean, it's about aromas in the garden. Well, read it and decide for yourself. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over the area, but I advise you to subscribe and have it delivered to your home. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. That just disappear for a second?
Maybe. I thought it was you. I thought you just hit the button and I couldn't hear it.
No, I don't know what happened there. I'm not in control.
Elvis Costello is an entity all of his own.
That's
so
true. I think that was it. It was Elvis himself.
Yes.
I think he's far greater
than the original Elvis.
And by the way, anybody who's been listening since 8 o'clock knows I'm not in control of the control board today.
No, we have gremlins.
No, it's me.
Purple ones. It's
operator error is what we call operator.
Are you the purple gremlin, Mr.
Novak? I drove the purple gremlin. Rick DeMille, meteorologist extraordinaire, is on the phone. Before we get to the forecast here.
And not in Chicago this morning. You got to tell your listeners that, right?
You don't have to. There's no, public disclosure. Who cares where you are, really?
I'm up in Madison, Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin. Came up here for my 25th college reunion.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. It's the 25th. So, the good thing about you is in your college 25th college reunion, you still have hair.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. There were a couple people who showed up, and they pretty much lost a lot of their hair. And, yeah.
I've been fortunate in that way too. And of course, at my 10-year high school, mm-hmm. you're talking college reunion, but my 10-year high school reunion, right. It seemed like half the guys were already bald.
I think you'll get that. You know, you'll get those people who kind of go early. But we've had a pretty good turnout. We've had about maybe 10 or 12 people show up. You know. Spouses and kids and stuff like that, and you kind of look around and you go, boy, you know, there's some people who didn't really get too successful in their career and others who, you know, continue to move forward, and it's always nice to talk and expand on things that we did, and we're going to meet up again today, so it's always nice to relive some of the days of the past and look at the department and talk about teachers and stuff like that, but the unions can be somewhat scary at times as well, Mike, because it kind of gives you somewhat of a benchmark to figure out where you are in life and where you're going and where you've been, I guess.
I guess so. You and I will talk about that over a beer at some point, but let's talk about the Gulf of Mexico and this tropical storm, Alex, and how's it? Everybody wants to know, how's it going to affect the oil slick in the Gulf of Mexico? What's your take on that?
Well, I think first off, it's amazing how a storm like this is just bringing more people to understand, you know, the ramifications of what the soil spill could have on the natural. I mean, obviously the ecosystem. That's the one. I think the one only good thing about Tropical Storm Alex. I guess the other good thing is that I don't think it's going to have much of an effect at all on the slick itself, Mike. Only from a standpoint of. I don't think there's going to be any long duration of strong winds that is going to compromise the efforts of the recovery of the oil. It did come on shore in the central Yucatan late last night as a 65-mile-per-hour tropical storm. As we know, you need 75-mile-per-hour winds to have a hurricane. Right now, the storm is actually weakened somewhat. It's down to about 40 miles per hour, but it is expected to exit the Yucatan, get into what's called the Bay of Campeche. That's the southwestern section of the Gulf of Mexico. From what I can see, it looks like it's going to probably ramp up again to a Category 1 hurricane and then a Category 2 hurricane. But I think it's going to mainly hit sections south of Brownsville, Texas. I don't think this is going to be anything from a standpoint of affecting either the upper Texas Gulf Coast, that's the area generally east and north of Houston, nor is it going to affect the oil slick in Louisiana or the Gulf Coast area of Louisiana and Mississippi. The only thing I think this can have an effect on, Mike, is if it stays in the Gulf for a long period of time, you end up getting these large swells, and those swells could eventually push that oil onshore. I don't think that's going to happen to any great extent. If they get maybe 1 to 2 foot swells, you know, for maybe an extra day or two, that probably should be to the extent of it. However, what they should do with this particular storm, and I'm sure they've done this already, is go through some sort of mitigation plan that says, okay, what would happen if the storm did turn north? What would happen if the storm did turn into a Category 3? And then get some sort of, you know, local wave models and tide models and surf models, and then see what would happen if that water did push onshore and how far inland it would push and what effect the oil would have on it. But I think clearly, I've been watching the weather for the last couple of weeks down there, clearly the oil spill there has no impact whatsoever on what we call the hydrologic cycle, which is the ability for water to evaporate into the atmosphere. Even though there's an oil slick on the surface of the Gulf of Mexico, I've seen the normal day-to-day growing of cumulus and cumulonimbus clouds and showers develop in that area.
Then tell me about this. Did it actually rain oil in Louisiana? What's that all about, where there was a rain and there was some sheen in the gutters afterward?
Well, I think if there is any sort of evaporation of water that has a little bit of oil in it, sure, you probably could get some, but I don't think it's going to be of a major event. I did hear about that, but I don't think that's going to be something where a hurricane is going to, you know, pick up all that, you know, oil and then, you know, moving on shore in the form of a cloud or anything like that. Remember,
I guess the question, I was just going to say, is it possible for this to happen? That would be my question.
I think it's possible that anything on the water in some sort of, you know, microscopic form could probably become part of, you know, a raindrop. But, yeah. Absolutely. In a large-scale way, probably not.
All right. Give me a one-minute forecast, and then we want to get to Ed because he's got a question for us.
Okay, sure. Well, right now, radar shows a line of heavy thunderstorms extending from just west of Lake County into central sections of DuPage County. They're moving east-northeast at about 20 to 25 miles per hour. Heavy rain this morning, probably lighter rain this afternoon, so obviously today not the day to do anything outside. We are under a slight risk of severe weather, but there's no watches, there's no warnings. So on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being, you know, not so bad and 10 being bad, today's probably about a 2. The good news is that we clear out, dry out later on tonight, and then, Mike, Monday afternoon, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week, beautiful, what we call Mike Novak weather, mix of sun and clouds, breezy and cool with a high temperature about 75 to 80. So really nice stuff heading into the last week of June. This is going to be good stuff. It'll give a chance for a lot of things to dry out.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. Quickly, Ed, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, thank you. Well, I have a question. I play around with websites, and I've created a tool that basically turns any computer into like an Amber Alert system. So if you're, it's like a real-time screensaver. So if your computer's not in use, it'll actually show real-time images of weather. And what I'm trying to do is put the tool together where I could coordinate with someone who can give me the weather information and put this out to the public for free, and they would be able to, if their computer is not in use, it could tell them, hey, the system is coming up, and here's what it looks like, and it constantly updates up to the second. And I was just wondering if maybe the Mike Novak Show or someone like that would be interested in it.
You know, is this something to be? We got like 20 seconds here, Rick. Would this be useful? Meteorologically?
I think, Ed, if you want to talk more about this, go onto my website and send me an email, and I'd love to sit down and talk to you about this because I think it'd be something that either schools or educational facilities, particularly daycare centers, would love. Utilized. So I think that's something that we can definitely talk about.
All right. And you can write me too, Ed. Rick DeMille Weather. You can link to him on my website. Rick, we will talk next week. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Take care, Mike.
Bye-bye. Stay tuned. Next hour. Oh, and CNN News is next.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Didn't we already do this?
Yeah, but who cares? It's worth it again.
I couldn't get the machine. You're right.
The machines are angry with you.
They are angry with me today. Maybe
you made fun of their brethren.
And my phone was ringing like crazy. And Ron Coghill comes on. He goes, "Well, didn't you get any of the pictures?" And he's sending me pictures, and I don't even know what he's talking about. And I don't get pictures on this phone. This is a phone.
I'm the same way.
This just answers.
I get them, but they're not.
I'm lucky if I get voice on this. Okay, and I saw this number that I didn't recognize, and I went, "Oh, what is?" It's like, what is this? It's like 9,000, and I don't know what a 9,000 is. I have no idea who that is, and I have no way to download them. I have to go online, but I need... Never mind.
Don't picture test... picture message Novak. Don't do it.
No. Yeah. It ain't going to happen.
Email. But speaking of messages, though, as we've
been
tweeting...
Right.
We have Cope Dog.
Cope Dog
has a question for us. It's, any idea where to pick up mosquito dunks or a product with BTI in Chicago? No luck yet with local stores, only suburban outlets. What's a BTI?
It is Bacillus thuringiensis, is Israeli, whatever, something. Anyway, BTI, it prevents mosquito larvae from, it kills them. So they can't morph into mosquitoes.
So this would be something good for my rain buckets out back.
Yes, and given all the rain we've had, mosquito dunks are not a bad idea to throw in there. If you've got something where you can't control the water, especially if you can't just drain it out, that is something that you might use.
Is now, disturbing you're, now, the water enough?
Yeah, disturbing helps. And you're probably going to, if we go through 3 days of no rain, you're going to go through those buckets so fast it won't matter.
Yeah.
The outback here with the water.
I did notice one was trying to develop a little algae.
Yeah.
I gave it a stir.
Just give it a stir.
Yeah.
But you're going to use up that water so fast. But if you've got standing water someplace where you can't drain it, yeah. Now, Cope Dog wants to know where to get those in Chicago. He says... as you said, only suburban outlets. Apparently, I went online here. It says Home Depot's supposed to have them. Who else? Let's go back to this.
Our friends at Sid's Pesci's or
the garden centers are supposed to have them too. I would assume.
I'm going to mutilate the name, but I drove past. How do you say it? Gethsemane. Gethsemane. Last night.
Yeah.
And that their facility looks beautiful.
Because they take over basically Ashland Avenue up there.
It's kind of refreshing to see amongst, all the urban sprawl, this nice green patch of beauty.
So you should be able to, I would think, it's Bacillus thuringiensis israeliensis and BTI. It's a larval agent. Okay. And I'll tell you what. Why don't if folks have bought any of these dunks or they know they're available, 888-773-838-9278. If you call me and give me a source in Chicago, I'll give you a prize so we can help out Cope Dog. Let them know where you can find mosquito dunks. And, yeah, you might be.
They're already out. They're already starting. I've already killed a bunch trying to attack
my
kids.
Oh, yeah. Mosquitoes are there.
And
the other thing you could try if you wanted, you know, a product that is not doesn't kill the larvae but might keep them off you is from A-Plus Pest Control. And they have their oil-based, cedar oil-based spray,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know,
safe for you,
and, oh, you know, it's
pets,
interesting because
I used it on my dog and my son last year.
It's
not my
interesting
dog, my sister's
that,
dog.
That this conversation has come up because I had we got somebody calling in already. Maybe somebody wants to win a prize. Where is it? Oh, I'm going to have to find it. It was information about DEET and other chemicals interacting together. And hold on a second. I am going online right now, going on my computer to find where that was, because I know I've got it here. DEET. Here it is. DEET and 2,4-D, interestingly enough. Oh, and you know what? I'm not... Okay, here we go. It says that I got this a newsletter, and who did the newsletter come from? Natural Resources Defense Council, which makes sense because I'm going to have Josh Mogerman on any second to talk about the Asian carp. And DEET, what's the information? It's interesting. 2,4-D, which is a the weed killer you use on your lawn. It's one of the most prevalent weed killers out there.
And it's bad, right?
Yes, it's not good for you. It's a very bad, juju. And it's in most of what they call weed and feed, which sounds cute, but it's not. Did you know that 2,4-D is absorbed in the body more easily in the presence of sunscreen, DEET, which is in mosquito repellent,
mm-hmm.
and the consumption of alcohol?
Darn.
Yeah.
My camping trips, I'm gone.
Yeah, but think about this. You lather up in sunscreen, you kick back a few brews, and then you roll in the lawn, and you're absorbing this stuff more readily.
That's all three of them for me, because I'm white as a sheet, so...
So you've got the sunscreen and the DEET.
Yeah. And now they have the combo ones, where you can get the sunscreen and bug repellent together in one bottle. Called the one I used in the past has been Bullfrog.
But I was just amazed. I hadn't heard that before, and it's that's part of the problem when we use these various chemicals. The manufacturers always tell you, "Don't worry, they're safe. We had them tested." Well, they test them themselves, and then they tell the EPA, "Well, here's what our people found. Our scientists say it's really safe." That's generally how that goes.
That, you know, the BPA in your kids' sippy cups is okay too,
because. Well, we make it, and we tested it.
And it's fine.
Don't worry. What are you worried about? We're just a company. We're just trying to make money. Come on. What's the problem? So that is the first thing. The second thing is
nobody
measures how these things work together. The EPA doesn't do this, and there's all kinds of ways chemicals can interact. Well, somebody must have, because at the Beyond Pesticides website, they had this information of 2,4-D and DEET and sunscreen. Boy, that just sounds like an unholy combination, doesn't it? So if you use weed and feed on your lawn, don't drink that much and roll around in there. Don't use sunscreen and roll around in there. And don't put mosquito repellent on and roll around in there. Because it is, and here's the other thing about DEET. The EPA, this is from the Natural Resources Defense Council site. The EPA believes that the normal use of DEET, this is, quote, the normal use of DEET does not present a health concern to the general U.S. population. But as NRDC writes, normal use does not really mean normal use. It means careful use of a prescribed kind. That's why the EPA requires the following text on all product labels. This is for DEET. Do not apply over cuts, wounds, or irritated skin. Well, no, because that's going to absorb it into your body.
Ow. No, let's take a lemon wedge and rub it in there.
Do not apply to hands or near eyes and mouth of young children. Do not allow young children to apply this product, meaning themselves, I guess. Use just enough repellent to cover exposed skin and or clothing. Well, how does anybody know what that really is?
Right.
You know what
they've
like?
They've bit me through the clothing before.
Sure.
I've been bit by a mosquito through my
clothes.
Do
not use under clothing. Avoid over application of this product. Wasn't that just two things ago?
Yeah.
That was the same thing. After returning indoors, wash treated skin with soap and water. Wash treated clothing before wearing it again.
It's bad juju.
Labels on sprays must also say, do not spray in enclosed areas, or everybody will drop dead. To apply to face, spray on hands first and then rub on face. Do not spray directly into face or onto face.
Exactly.
I can't see. So this is why BT dunks are better than DEET.
Mm-hmm.
And the oil is better. Oh, Lordy.
Well, you got some callers with some questions.
Oh, now they're... Okay. Oh, yeah. We got to get Josh.
We will.
Mogerman. So you call him, and I will talk to Jose in Aurora. You're on the Mike Novak Show. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about the birds attacking the zucchini blossoms.
Okay.
And I've had it happening for years. It wasn't the same birds that attacked yours, and it wasn't the same kind. It's just your ordinary garden zucchini. But they come in there and they eat the blossoms. And they will just take them.
So
and
what did you do?
I put like a 1-inch by 1-inch mesh over the whole thing, and I do it every single year because if I leave it out even for a day, they'll all be gone.
Really? Okay.
But the problem that you have with that is the mesh has to be big enough, and even sometimes, even a little bit, you know, a big enough mesh to not let the birds in, the bees won't get in there. So you might have to fertilize them yourself.
Interesting. Yeah, you're right, because you could do that. Yeah, but how about that intermediate mesh? It's like a 1/2 inch.
It still seems to scare away some of the bees.
Uh huh.
You know, so I mean, I just kind of like, and I've tried that, and I wasn't getting, you know, I wasn't getting a lot of food stuff.
Let me ask you a question, Jose, about that. When the plant gets big enough, did you find that maybe the birds didn't get all the flowers?
No, it's like more birds, and when the birds that were coming in for me weren't the same kind, it was cardinals that were coming in.
And cardinals too, huh?
Was it also a yellow zucchini?
Hmm?
Was it also a yellow zucchini? Was it the same kind of plant that they were attacking?
No, I don't grow that kind. I just grow your standard, you know, zucchini, the green one, the like a black beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, and at first I thought it was like chipmunks or, you know, something. Until, you know, so I sat out there, and the same thing. I sat out there. I'm like, well, I'll be damned. They come in and they like almost professionally like go completely around and just take it.
Well, we've got a problem here, don't we, Houston?
At least it's not just in my head or just...
No, it definitely isn't. I mean, I've seen it happen, and I was stunned, and I was puzzled that it was the cardinals. You know, it's not like I want to scare them away because, you know, they're my favorite bird, and I'm like, how could you do this to me?
I know, because they are... I love cardinals. Of course, in my yard, and I've mentioned this before on the show, I have a couple of mirrors. And, you know, cardinals go nutty when there are mirrors anywhere nearby.
Yeah. Yeah, I have one of them, too. And I'm like, you know, and I have a big mirror for them to play on. But it was them that was coming in it. But that the biggest thing that you'll run across doing it is you're going to have to fertilize them yourself. You know, and basically.
So we got to get Heather out there with the little paintbrush, and she's going to take the male.
You're right. You are going to turn me into a gardener before this.
I've never done that.
Yeah.
I don't take the paintbrush. What I'll do is I'll clip one of the male flowers.
Yeah.
And I'll just fertilize all the female flowers.
So you just sort of brush it.
Shake it up next to it?
Yeah. You'll cut part of the flower blossom off so that you have most of the male flower inside exposed. And then you just kind of dip it into all the female flowers. And one should be enough to do however many blossoms of the same kind.
Yeah.
That's how I've managed to deal with it over the years. But right now I'm looking at my zucchini, and it's funny because they have grown so well that they're starting to push up on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make sure that you have a big enough screen that when, the plant goes to its full height, it doesn't, leave a part underneath, that they'll just walk right under and go right at them.
Yeah, but once you have the fruit, you're safe. I mean, because...
Yeah, you're safe.
Yeah, once it's just the flowers.
The fruit grows quickly. And then you'll get more flowers, and they won't go after the fruit, but they'll go after the flowers of the next generation.
And have you found it's with all zucchini, or is it just certain types?
I only grow the black beauties.
Okay.
So I don't grow any of the yellow or any of the other kinds.
Yeah, we got a yellow. They've been attacking the yellow zucchini I've got here.
I think the flowers are all the same. They just happen to attack that one, but I'm sure if you covered that one, they'll attack the other one.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't just an anomaly. I mean, I've dealt with it for years.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to know, because I thought it interesting that even in a parking lot, you're going to get attacked by the birds here.
It's right. Unescapable. You got good plants. They attract things.
Well, okay.
Yeah,
you figure
in a parking lot there, that's like prime beef.
it's probably true because there's nothing else there.
There's nothing else there. That's just that might as well have a light pointed to it.
Well, Jose, I want to thank you for your help because we needed to know whether we were alone in this problem. Do you have a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine?
No, I don't.
You do now. And I'll also send them, let's see, you're in Aurora. We could send a gift certificate to SIDS. How would that be?
That's great. I go there all the time.
All right.
I do have one question for you.
All right.
If you could put it out there to everyone.
Yeah.
With the bind borers, has anybody come up with, something that I might actually want to use on my plants?
meaning that isn't going to poison you?
That's right. There's no point in growing it if you just have to look at it because it's pretty.
You know what? Let me do a little research on that. This is my homework for next week. Vine borers, zucchini.
Yeah, zucchini. I figured it might affect your garden. I know that I've dealt with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Let me do a little research on that. And next week, I hope you're listening, or you can call back, and I will.
I listen.
Get you. Well, I appreciate it. Get you an answer on the vine borers, the organic way, the safest the safest possible way to deal with them.
Absolutely.
That's what I will do. All right, Jose. Thank you so much for calling.
Don't hang up, Jose. I'm going to get your info before you go. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
You put him on hold there, and it's 9:21. I haven't given out the time in
I just lost him. Call me back, Jose.
See, you were focused on the show and not the Blackhawks.
I was focused. I am not focused on the Blackhawks now. Not till later.
Because you're leaving pretty soon, aren't you?
Once the whole cavalcade arrives. But it doesn't look like the weather's being too parade friendly out there.
No, it's not. I heard a rumble of thunder a second ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to
get that radar up there.
Me back, Jose. I want to get your number and your information. So.
All right.
I just hit the wrong button. I'm sorry.
And Jim, we're going to get to in Earlville in a second. I got to get to Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council, which we will do in just a second. But first, I've got some business to take care of. Here's Dr. Wally's second tomato tip of the day, brought to you by Pesci's Garden Center in Des Plaines. Ever notice how good tomato plants smell? Well, insects like that too. But certain strong scented plants can be used to disguise the tomato scent. See, if we're talking here about organic solutions, this is certainly one of the best organic solutions you can come up with. Onions, chives, and garlic can confuse ants, aphids, and flea beetles and should be planted near your tomatoes. Radishes repel cucumber beetles. Marigolds are useful against aphids, Colorado potato beetles, and white flies. Many aromatic flowers and herbs also attract beneficial insects. The number of plants that attract the good guys is large, so stop into Pesci's Garden Center for a list of plants that draw pollinators and beneficial insects. They also have good guy versus bad guy insect tables, and I'll tell you that a lot of you don't really know the difference between the good guys and the bad guys, and sometimes it's hard to tell, so you might want to take a look at those tables. You can pick one up at Pesci's, or you can go online to Pesci's.com, then go to Garden RX at the bottom of the page. Wally says that mixing perennials and herbs with your vegetables promotes a healthy garden and creates design harmony. Family owned since 1924, Pesci's is just minutes off of I-294 at 170 South River Road, one block north of Rand Road in Des Plaines. Pesci's, three generations of attentive service, expert advice, and uncompromising quality.
Hello, gardeners. It's Anne from Neptune's Harvest Organic Fertilizers in Gloucester, Mass. If you're planting flowers, vegetables, shrubs, or just trying to keep your lawn healthy and green, then you should know about Neptune's Harvest. Neptune's Harvest fertilizers come from the mineral-rich North Atlantic Ocean, which contains all the nutrients plants and soil need. Flower growers, get your sunglasses out. You'll want to use them when you're looking at how bright those colors are. Vegetable growers, with Neptune's Harvest, you can achieve the amazing results you deserve for all your efforts. You'll have the most abundant, sweet-tasting supply of organically grown produce. And there's nothing like the taste of a fresh garden tomato you grew yourself. Neptune's Harvest works so great, whether you know what you're doing or not, you'll look good. And you'll feel good, because you're doing the right thing for the environment and your health. Try Neptune's Harvest products from the ocean to set your plants in motion. Available at your local garden center. And to learn more, go to neptunesharvest.com.
One of the most important things gardeners need to know is the pH of their soil. Now, don't panic. It's just the measure of whether your soil is acidic or alkaline. In the immediate Chicago area, we tend to have alkaline soils. That's the reason why it's so difficult to grow blueberries and why your rhododendrons look like sticks with leaves on the end of them. That's why the Espoma people developed Hollytone, the original acid-loving plant food. Hollytone's blend of natural organics provides a safe, long-lasting feeding. And now, Hollytone contains biotone beneficial microbes for even better growth and color. All natural Hollytone is low in salts, so it won't burn plant roots and it won't leach out of the soil with the next rain. One application of Hollytone lasts for months and even improves your soil. For more than 50 years, this is what the experts in Chicago have been telling you to use for your acid-loving plants. Hollytone. For more information about Hollytone and other Espoma products, call 888-ESPOMA-1 or visit Espoma.com. ESPOMA.com. Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929. Like the weather out there right now. You've got the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Hi, we're your weather girl.
Uh-huh.
And have we got news for you?
You better listen.
Get ready, all your lonely girls, and leave those umbrellas at home.
All right.
It's rising.
Mm.
It's true. It's raining men. But that usually happens on Pride Day, doesn't it? And Heather is going to be ducking out pretty soon, and lovely Leah will be taking over on the phones, Ryan.
Yes.
Has she been studying up?
She looks like she's been taking a studious notes and
a studious nap is what she looks like she's been taking.
No, it's just early in the morning. Yeah.
All right. Well,
it's hard. You know how it is. You go from a nocturnal lifestyle to this up with the dawn and the gardening people. Mm-hmm. It's an adjustment.
Well, I do want to say that my buddy Dan Costa from Vern Goer's Greenhouses, or Greenhouse, rather, in Hinsdale, has some solutions for the borer problem. I hope Jose is still listening. And is he going to help with Jim's problem, too?
Yes.
All right. So Jim in Earlville has got beetles eating his basil and habanero peppers. So we will do that in a second. But I have to go first to line three and bring in a very patient Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council. How are you doing, Josh?
I am great, Grandmaster Mike. How are you today?
Grandmaster. it's raining. The control board's out of control. And did you hear what I read earlier? You guys sent me the information on DEET, which I thought was pretty remarkable. I'm sort of blindsiding you with that, but what is interesting is how it interacts with other chemicals, especially 2,4-D, which is what a lot of people use in on their lawns as an herbicide. And I wasn't aware of that. I was also not aware that it interacts with sunscreen and alcohol consumption.
Yeah, that's one of the problems that we have with chemicals. You know, the last time we were on, we were talking about atrazine and its potential impact as not as a carcinogen on its own, but as something that persists in the environment and makes other nasty things worse. And that tends to happen with a lot of the pesticides that, unfortunately, like in the case of 2,4-D, we're using all over the place in abundance.
But that's not what we're talking about.
No,
I mean,
there's,
you know, Josh, there's always so much and so little time. Josh Mogerman, as I said, with the Natural Resources Defense Council. He's based here in the Midwest, specifically in Chicago, has been on the show many times. We've talked about a lot of different issues, and one of the issues that keeps rearing its ugly head and fins and tail and scales is the Asian carp issue, and how to keep the Asian carp from getting into Lake Michigan. Now, if you go to my website, mikenowak.net, MikeNowak.net, you go to this week's show, I've written about this, and the thing you're going to find most amazing, and this is based on articles that you sent me, that the NRDC has posted, Huffington Post, and on your own website. And one of them was a trail that led back to the Reader, Chicago Reader, and I had not seen the article. And it was the guys who did the eDNA testing in the Chicago waterways to see if the Asian carp was there. They're convinced it's in Lake Michigan already.
Well, and yeah, we have one of those eDNA tests that a few months back showed that there was likely a fish that had made its way into Calumet Harbor, which is an inlet on Lake Michigan in northwest Indiana. You know, interestingly, this week all the hubbub has been about the fish that was caught in Lake Calumet, a different body of water on the Chicago waterway.
Yeah, I guess I kind of buried the lead there.
Yeah,
but
the thing that was not that didn't really make any news that is perhaps the bigger deal is the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers has said that they no longer have a contract with Lindsay Chatterton and the University of Notre Dame to do this tracking anymore.
All right, let's stop right there. All right, let's put all of this in order.
Yes.
Okay, we've been doing all the, you know, there's this huge hue and cry, close the locks, keep the fish from getting in there. The various governmental agencies say, no, we can't do that. It's going to ruin our economy. Okay, meanwhile, eDNA testing is there. They're testing these waterways to see if the carp might have gotten in there. The eDNA tests show, yep, we think there's carp here in the waterways. Meanwhile, we actually catch a carp in Lake Calumet. Ooh, and the eDNA, by the way, the eDNA guys say, and we already think it's in Lake Michigan. And then finally, to top everything off, don't worry, we're not going to do any more testing, says, was it the Army Corps of Engineers?
Right.
because that contract with the University of Notre Dame has been suspended. So at a time when we have already found an Asian carp in Lake Calumet, and we think it's in Lake Michigan, we have stopped testing. What kind of madness is that, Josh?
Well, it seems a little like we're burying our heads, doesn't it? You know, I think there are a lot of forces at play in here, unfortunately, and many of them just don't want to know the real answer. I don't necessarily think that's the case with the Corps, but, you know, you certainly have a group that has invested millions of dollars in a large electric fence that was intended to keep the carp at bay and keep them in the Illinois River that doesn't seem to be working. But that makes a lot of people look bad. And I think there is a real wish and desire for the status quo to work, and unfortunately eDNA continues to imply otherwise.
You know, I'm trying to figure out who has ultimate responsibility for this. I mean, because when we find the Asian carp in Lake Michigan, and believe me, I'm pretty sure we will, who takes charge? Is it possible? You know, we've got the Army Corps of Engineers. Do they have ultimate authority? Who has ultimate authority here? Is it the state of Illinois? Is it the federal government? I'm trying to think who has the authority to shut the locks and keep the fish out.
Well, that's been part of the reason this has been such a big mess. You have a mishmash of agencies. You have the U.S. EPA. You have the Illinois DNR. You have the Army Corps of Engineers. You have the Coast Guard. All of them are part of this Asian Carp Rapid Response Group. But I think, you know, we did get some potentially good news on this in the form of a news conference with Senator Durbin on Friday, in which he announced that a letter had gone to the White House from, I believe, 15 senators and representatives asking the White House to appoint a single commander of the federal effort to keep Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. And that has potential to really change things and hopefully streamline and redirect our efforts.
You're saying put your trust in the Congress? Is that what you're saying?
No, the Congress has asked the White House to appoint a single person who would guy. He would be. I don't like the example, but he'd be like the Thad Allen with the BP spill.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I keep drawing parallels to the Gulf of Mexico and what's going on there. You know, the idea that we've already have millions of gallons of oil gushing into the Gulf, and yet we can't do a six-month moratorium on drilling or even the deep water drilling. Now, here we are in the Midwest. We've already found an Asian carp in Lake Calumet, and we can't close the locks for, you know, a short time and really do a study. Oh, that's right. I forgot. The contract has run out, so we're not doing any more testing. What's the next step? What's the NRDC want to do?
Well, you know, we're really focused on what the end game and the real permanent solution to all of this is. And we're convinced that the only way to really address this issue is to put hydrological separation in place, which means a physical barrier rather than a virtual electric fence that separates the Mississippi River system from the Great Lakes. That is somewhat different than closing the locks. The locks are a potentially very good, very short, temporary way to slow down the fish. But the only way to really do it is to move further back, closer to the Illinois River, and put real physical barriers in place. The great thing about that is that not only does that potentially take care of the carp issue, but there are plenty of other ugly, bad, invasive species queued up to make that transition between those two ecosystems. And lots of them are things like viruses and plants that are not going to be caught up in an electric fence. And so this would be something that would be no doubt expensive, but would finally eliminate this corridor for invasive species that's been so expensive for people in both both ecosystems.
Well, it's coming from both ways. Obviously, you know, you're looking to prevent this from coming up the Mississippi, but the St. Lawrence Seaway has provided enough damage to the Great Lakes already.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, no one's saying that this particular corridor is the only thing that needs to be addressed. I think in the long run, you're going to see a real debate about the St. Lawrence Seaway and whether that is something else whose time has passed. We're operating with infrastructure that was conceived and built in a different time and didn't foresee a lot of these issues that are, you know, potentially economy crushing. We're looking at this in a trade-off setting where we're looking at fairly limited interest in terms of shipping on the canal or shipping moving through the St. Lawrence Seaway, and we need to think a lot more broadly in terms of the water resources.
You're right, because 100 years ago, when this was the flow was reversed and the waterways were connected, it saved Chicago. All right?
Absolutely.
And it made the modern Chicago possible.
Absolutely.
And now it's got the potential to kill Chicago. And the technology has changed, the situation has changed, the environmental conditions have changed, and we're not adapting. We're, as many people have written, you're not the only ones at NRDC, we can't use 19th century technology to address 21st century problems. And that's kind of what we're doing at the moment. And you're right. I don't know what the barriers are to separate. Has anybody figured out that actual mechanism to separate the waterways? Is the engineering there? Is the design there? Or are we still at a stage, Josh, where the right people have to sit down and figure out exactly how this happens?
Well, that's where the big fight is coming, because the people with the responsibility for this are the Army Corps of Engineers. They have a study underway, but it's not due to be out for, I believe, 7 years. And clearly, we don't have that long to wait. Clearly, this is something that needs to move forward in a very quick fashion. And, you know, there's no doubt that the hydrology involved with this is complicated and difficult to work through. But the time frame that has been laid out here, it pretty much opens the door to really significant problems that we're going to be dealing with for decades and centuries down the line if we don't speed up the program.
Talking to Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council, before I let you go, the last thing that concerns me about this, and it seems to be sort of a model for the way we work in this country lately, is that the science is being ignored. Here, the folks who say, well, we can't possibly do anything about it because it's going to affect the economy, are the ones saying, you know, you got to show me a fish before we're going to do anything. Well, now we've got one, but they're going to say, well, show me a fish in Lake Michigan, and they're probably also the ones to say eDNA doesn't prove anything. But if you read that story in the Reader about it, those guys say, oh, yeah, it does. And it really makes sense. And what disturbs me is we ignore the science and we go for the visceral, it's for the simple solutions rather than paying attention to the people who might actually have the answers. And again, I take it back to the Gulf Coast and what's happening there. We tend to ignore the science that says, you know, we really don't have a way of dealing with this. So maybe we shouldn't be doing this. And the same thing here in the waterways leading into the Great Lakes. The science tells us those fish are there. We better do something right now. But the longer we stall, the more likely a catastrophe is going to happen.
Yeah, this is a unique situation. You know, usually when you're dealing with invasive species, you don't know that there's an issue until it's too late, until this species has taken over or until you can't find other critters that should be there that have been squeezed out. You know, we have this somewhat historic opportunity here to nip this thing in the bud and cut it off before it has the same kind of impact on the Great Lakes ecosystem that we're already seeing from zebra and quagga mussels. But it's only if we're willing to really step up and take on that challenge. And up until this point, we've seemed pretty hesitant, and it's disappointing and frustrating. But I do think that the capture of the big head carp this week is potentially a game changer. The fact of the matter is that fish was found in a place where there was nothing preventing it from getting into Lake Michigan, and that's a real eye opener for people who are on the right side of this issue, but needed something beyond the eDNA, which is you know, cutting edge science. So now we've got both. We've got the eDNA basically being proved correct by the presence of this fish, and now we can look at some of those other hits that we've gotten before, which, you know, include the Illinois Lock right next to Navy Pier. So we're finding potentially that these guys have already moved throughout the system, and it's time to really take aggressive action.
Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council, www.nrdc.org. Go to my website, mikenovak.net. Look up this week's show. I've got links to several of these articles and to the NRDC. Josh, we're just going to keep talking about this, and I hope that the White House does get involved and bring somebody in and says, hey, you know what, it's time to do something and make it happen, and I'm sure you're going to agitate for that.
Hopefully so. Thanks.
All right, Josh, I'll talk to you real soon. Have a great day now.
You too. Bye-bye.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM, and here's an invitation. From the Care of Trees, one of America's great bicycle events is coming to Chicago, and I'm going to be part of it. The 2010 Stihl, and that's STIHL. You know the guys that make the chainsaws? Get it? Trees? Chainsaws? The Stihl Tour de Trees kicks off from Chicago's Millennium Park on Sunday morning, July 18th, with a special broadcast of the Mike Novak Show, sponsored in part by the Care of Trees. I will be the MC for the event. As dozens of cyclists head out from the park on a six-day trip to the Mississippi River and back to raise money for tree research and education. My special guest that morning, and you want to come out to Millennium Park and see this, my special guest is going to be Rolling Stones keyboardist and world-class tree farmer Chuck Lavelle. And in the coming weeks, I guess I'm going to start doing that, maybe next week, give away two pairs of tickets to the Lavelle benefit performance at the Omni Chicago Hotel on July 17th. I hope you'll come to Millennium Park to join us for the Tour de Trees kickoff and celebration on July 18th. Meanwhile, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, The Care of Trees, proud sponsor of the 2010 Tour de Trees. All right, now hold on just a second. As I said, the system has been not my friend today. It has been my enemy. Let's see if we can make this work.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
No matter what you're growing, you want to give your plants the best chance of succeeding. Have you tried Dr. Earth potting soils? They have the same probiotics that are so effective in the Dr. Earth fertilizers. And as a matter of fact, we're using the Dr. Earth potting soils in the WCPT urban parking lot farm right outside this building where I think it's raining, or was a while ago. Anyway, Dr. Earth potting soils can be used indoors and outdoors in raised beds, mixed with existing garden soil, added to existing soil in containers or pots, or used on its own. It's going to improve your soil's health and physical properties and increase nutrient availability for your plants. Give Dr. Earth a try. Available only at your local independent garden center, you can go to drearth.com to find a dealer near you. Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, Mighty House at 10 a.m. And I do want to, by the way, before I get to the phones here, Jim and Dan, extend an invitation for you to come out in a few weeks. What's that, 2 weeks, I guess? 3 weeks? Yeah, 3 weeks. To the Tour de Trees out at Millennium Park. We're launching this amazing cycle. It's not a race. It's a tour. And they're going to go through northern Illinois, out across the Mississippi to Iowa, and then back into the Chicago area, end up at the Morton Arboretum. It's about a 5-6 day journey. And all of the people who are in there have raised at least $3,500. You have to have raised at least $3,500 to get into the tour. And it's all for tree research and education. And Steel is the main sponsor. The Care of Trees is one of the sponsors of the broadcast. And Davey, the Tree Care Experts, is also one of the sponsors. And I'm happy to have them, the Davey Tree Expert Company, excuse me, is one of the sponsors of the broadcast, and there's a lot of people that are going to be there. As I said, Chuck Lavelle is going to be on the show. Suzanne Malik McKenna is going to be on the show. We're going to have Ask an Arborist questions and answers with tree experts, and it should be a lot of fun. And then the big ceremony at 9:30, and we send them off on their way. All right, let us go to line two to one of the most patient men in the world, and that's Jim from Earlville. You're on the Mike Novak Show. How you doing, Jim?
Good. How are you?
All righty. Where are you?
Well, right now I'm traveling south on I-65 in Indiana.
Wow. Is it raining, or is that just traffic noise?
That's my truck.
Oh, okay. You had a question about beetles, eh?
Yes, we have some beetles in our garden. I guess they're about the size of, like, your pinky nail, and they're kind of a iridescent sort of bluish-yellow color, right on the angle you see them at. And they're eating our basil and our habaneros.
Did they have kind of a shiny appearance, the backs of the beetles?
Yeah, I'd say they're pretty shiny.
Yeah, I think you got Japanese beetles there. Let's go to line one and bring in Dan Costa from Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, pretty good, Mike.
All right, okay. It's going to be tough with the truck there. Hold on just a second, Jim, okay? I'm going to just bring in Dan. Woo! That's better. We're still with you, Jim. I'm not hanging up on you. Dan, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, Mike. I'm tired of thunderstorms.
Yeah, it's been one interesting week. So, but Rick DeMille says it's going to clear up this week. So, sounds like Jim might have Japanese beetles. Do you think so?
It's possible. They're just starting to show up. I've seen like two of them so far.
Yeah.
But with any of the edibles, though, you want to be very cautious of what you use on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I recommend usually is a spray made out of canola oil, which will kill just about any insect.
A spray made out of canola oil.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And how do you apply it?
Well, you mix this by yourself, and then you just spray it onto the plants.
And now, what do you mix it with?
Okay. Well, the recipe for it is 3 tablespoons of canola oil, a drop of liquid dish soap into a gallon of water.
Okay. 3 tablespoons of canola oil.
Mm-hmm.
What was the second part there?
1 drop of dish soap.
Now, it needs to be specific dish soap? Because there are certain dish soaps that you really can't use, right?
I use a brand called Dawn.
Yeah, a lot of people use Dawn, don't they?
And put that in a gallon of water and spray that on your plants.
Okay.
And it suffocates the insects.
All right, hang on just a second. It's going to be loud. We'll go back to Jim. Did you catch that, Jim?
Yes, I did. Am I supposed to spray that on the beetles or on the plants?
That's a really good point. Let's hear
both.
On both?
Both, yes.
So just spray the plant, spray the beetle. It probably helps to cover the beetle because then I understand it clogs their whatever function.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to, I'm sorry I'm doing that to you, Jim, but it's, the truck is pretty loud there.
Yeah, I understand.
That's one way to go about that and see if that helps. I would, the other question I would ask you, Dan, is whether there's a physical means of keeping the beetles off plants like that.
You could cover them with a screening.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking, too. It's another way to prevent the beetles from getting on there in the first place. Certain plants want to grow rampantly, but in terms of basil, I would think that you could cover it fairly easily.
Yeah. Just a light netting.
Yeah. Did you catch that, Jim?
Yes, I did.
So
yeah.
You got two.
What we did yesterday is I plucked them all off and,
That's the best way to do it, is just take them off, get them out of there early. And the thing, if they're Japanese beetles, and they might very well be, get them off early, because if they start feeding on that, they send out signals to their buddies to come and dine. But I would do one of two things. Do the canola spray if you want to try. There are other oils out there, too. Go to a good garden center, tell them your problem, ask if they have an oil treatment, and they will... give you a garden product that you can use. But you could also do the netting, and I think that might help, especially if you can put it over the whole plant.
Okay.
All right, Jim, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Safe driving now.
Will do.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I just got another minute here, Dan. We were talking about the borer problem.
Right. This is something that I've told several of my customers.
Yeah.
And they look at me like I'm crazy. And then if they try it, they come back the next year and tell me how good it works. So the thing is, the female insect that lays the eggs that makes the borers, she's flying around in June. And she dies out about the end of June. So the thing to do is to plant your zucchini seeds on the 4th of July weekend. And they will germinate extremely fast in the warm soil. They'll grow like mad. And as I tell people, you'll still have enough zucchini by the end of the season that your neighbors will be locking their doors and turning off the lights when they see you coming with an armload of them.
So, but that's a really good point, which is know the insect's life history. Mm-hmm. And if you know the insect's life history, you know when to plant and when not to plant. So you're saying, get it 4th of July, we're coming up on a great time to plant zucchini seeds, right. And you'll still have plenty of time to get fruit.
Right. I got this from Extension Service several years ago, and it works. I do it every year.
Those are great tips. Dan Costa at Vern Goers, give me 30 seconds about what you're doing there right now.
It's starting to thunder again. It's probably going to rain.
I was going to say about the nursery, actually.
Oh, about the nursery. We are going through our summer stuff. We're planting up the mums for fall, getting them in the containers, emptying the greenhouses. We got to get them sterilized because by the middle of July, we'll be getting the poinsettias in.
That's the way it goes. Is the horticultural industry is already in the fall. So, all right, Dan, thank you so much for the great advice. I'll talk to you real soon, buddy.
Okay.
Next time you're walking downtown along the Chicago River, keep an eye out for the Fish Hotel on the south side of the river between Dearborn and State Streets. This floating garden was designed and built by WRD Environmental for Friends of the Chicago River. The Fish Hotel welcomes aquatic visitors to a stretch of river that otherwise isn't very hospitable to them, with very little shade and with sides of concrete and steel instead of natural shoreline. Watch for a variety of fish, butterflies, dragons, herons, even an occasional muskrat in this oasis of floating nature. culture to create the first known and award-winning fish hotel. WRD drew on its sustainable roots. The habitat features locally sourced native plants as well as materials that are recycled, biodegradable, and energy efficient. For sustainable landscape and fishscape solutions, choose WRD Environmental. Located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology and online at WRDEnvironmental.com. Now, it's summer lawn care time, and Sid's Greenhouses are ready to help with great organic products from Jonathan Green, like their organic lawn fertilizer. This environmentally friendly lawn food won't burn your lawn. It's formulated with all organic nutrients, so apply it any time of the year for a thick green lawn. Now, let me give you a tip on that, too. Any fertilizer, it doesn't matter whether it is organic or non-organic, you should not apply before a thunderstorm because a lot of that stuff is going to run off. So it's just something else to keep in mind when you're applying fertilizer. By the way, SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway, and you can always get Jonathan Green products there. And they're in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard and on the web at SIDSonline.com. Remember that as you're cleaning up around the garage and shed, scoop up all those plastic pots, trays, cell packs, bring them to SIDS for recycling. Once again, they're working with the local recyclers to keep those discarded plastics out of the landfills. Okay, we're wrapping it up. You didn't get to say hi, Leah, so say hi, Leah.
Hi, Leah.
There you go.
Hi.
I was going to have you do more, but we got busy there, as it goes. And thank you for filling in for Heather. Oh, there's a text from Heather. She says, it's pouring. That's the text. So, well, you know, that's what you get for running out to a parade and try to lick the Stanley Cup.
It'll probably be easier, but through the rain, maybe people won't be watching her so closely or something.
Yeah.
She can dip in the clouds.
I hope you tune in next week to the Mike Novak Show. I think Heather will be back. Leah, thanks.